This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
I think the most important thing is to go fast, go alone, to go far, go together. That's it.
Stephen Shedletsky is a company speaker, leader, and innovator at Start With Why, Simon Sinek's brainchild, which encourages people to find their purpose within their work. Stephen's why is to engage people in meaningful ways so that we live in a more fulfilled world. Stephen has worked with clients all over the world in education, aerospace, banking, healthcare, and much more. For more information, visit startwithwhy.com. In today's episode, we talk about the difference between being nice and being kind, the golden circle, the two keys to finding your why, how to create a kind and supportive classroom environment. We also discuss what it means to be diverse and inclusive. I'd love to start right off the bat by welcoming you, Stephen, to this conversation. It's a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you. Likewise, it's great to be here with you.
And so as we've explored in the bio a little bit, you work extensively as a speaker to really bring this message of the importance of creating belonging and safety within our workplaces and educational culture. Can you describe a little bit about what kindness means to you within the context of educational leadership?
So I think there's a difference between being kind and being nice. I think sometimes being nice can be passive. So I did a little bit of work with a company called Nationwide. They do insurance. And one of their internal leaders said, there's a Nationwide nice, which is, I'm not going to tell you the truth of what I think about you as a person or your idea. I'll just be passive and pretend that I really like you and agree with everything you're saying. That's not kindness. That's being nice. And I think, you know, we meet strangers and, you know, this is the first time you and I have spoken. And for me to like jump in and give you unsolicited feedback that's not grounded in really anything isn't fair.
Right.
It's actually important for me to be nice to you to build trust. And once there's trust, I think kindness, like for me, it is kind to give someone direct feedback that's wrapped in love, that's wrapped in me wanting to help you grow as a human being, but it may not come out nice because it maybe isn't the right thing for it to be. It might need to be direct, but so long as it's wrapped in love and respect and from a place that is generative, the intent of who I'm being to you is sourcing from a place of you, me wanting to be the best human being you can be. Doesn't mean that my vision of you, like you may have a different belief of who you are at your best.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't think being kind is necessarily being nice.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I think, again, within the culture of our school system, it's important to tap into that why and that ability to push people a little bit beyond their comfort zones, really, because you want them to be the best expression of themselves. So how can a teacher or educational leader, for that matter, use this concept of the golden circle, the why, the how, the what, to focus on what really matters in schools, which is obviously the kids?
So I want to challenge on which is obviously the kids. So the goal of the school, should they live their why, their just cause, their noble purpose for existing, is for the students, is to serve the community, right? The purpose of a school is to serve the community with which it operates. The goal of teachers is to serve the students. The goal of administration is to serve the teachers.
That's an important distinction. Tell me why that's right? Important.
Because if the administration serves the students, they're actually not leading. And they're undermining the very people who should be doing that work. The goal of the teacher is to create a condition in their classroom and with the classrooms amongst them that they collaborate with, to create conditions of safety, of belonging, such that people can be full expressions of themselves and become the best possible human beings they can be, which of course can include curriculum and not. And so the goal of the teachers are to serve each other and to serve students. But in order for that to happen, the administrators must serve the teachers and all of the support educational staff that goes to that end. Does that make sense?
It really does. Yeah. Because I think if you think about it as a business, that ultimately the leaders at the top are serving the managers so that those managers can release that same compassionate energy and deep sort of understanding of those individuals in a more wholehearted way. So I think it sort of echoes that same framework that if we support the people who are supporting the kids, that they can do a more effective job of doing that, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, just to highlight this one point, the goal of the business is to serve its customers, right? No margin, no mission, no mission, no margin. But the goal of leaders is not to serve the customers, because they don't. The goal of leaders is to serve the people who serve the customers.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. I love that. And I think it's a really important one to keep in the back of our heads. Before we move on a little bit to how we can create those safe environments, can you speak to specifically the Golden Circle and how it works? Because I think for some of the listeners, they may be very familiar with Simon Sinek's work around this, but some of them may not. So I'd love for you to perhaps give a little overview of what that is.
Sure. And if this feels incomplete to anyone, just Google Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K, and Golden Circle or Y, and you'll find more. Or hop to our website, startwithy.com. But it's a biological truth. So Simon Sinek, our founder and our visionary, made this discovery about 11 years ago. And he says a discovery and not an invention, because he didn't invent purpose or values or inspiration. He simply found a code to make it more accessible and usable. So the theory is that everyone knows what they do. Most people know how they do it different or better than their peers. For example, you could have two grade 11 algebra teachers at the same school. They have the same curriculum, the same leader, the same administrator. And yet one of the teachers prefers to teach algebra in a very analytically driven approach. Mm. And the other teacher prefers to teach it in a way that is collaborative and interactive. Mm-hmm. Same outcome, but just a different method to get that outcome. Mm-hmm. And particular students will gravitate towards one teacher as a preference over another. Normal. So they teach the same what, but they do it in a different how. Mm-hmm. The way they bring it to life is different. And the why is the ultimate differentiator. The why is the very reason you do it. Mm-hmm. In the context of a business, it's not to turn a profit. In the context of a school, it's not for better standardized testing results.
Right.
In the context of a school, it's, if I'm a teacher, I believe in the power of mentorship. Mm-hmm. Every kid needs one. And if I can create the condition for kids to find mentors, to find someone who can be an example for them, doesn't need to be me, I've won. Mm-hmm. Because I've shown them what's possible within them, and then their potential is limitless. That's a why. Mm-hmm. And so our why is our filter. We start with why. What's our reason for being? What's our just cause? We then bring it to life with our strengths, our values in action. And then finally, what we do are a consistent representation of why we do it. And if we value the curriculum or standardized testings over the very purpose we're doing it, you successfully received good standardized testing results and have not helped your students identify and strive towards their limitless potential.
Mm. Wow, that's powerful. What are some ways that teachers might be able to uncover their why? Because I think sometimes we get mired down in the day-to-day preparations for standardized tests or lesson planning, and it's very easy for a teacher within 1 or 2 years of their journey on this within their career to lose their why. So what can tune them back in, or are there any specific exercises or activities that they might be able to do that would get them reconnected with that?
Absolutely. So there is a process to clearly discover your why in clear language. And then the other answer is accountability. So first to the process, and we have tools available on our website to help people find their why. Mm-hmm. The trick is you can't do it alone. So you can't look in the mirror and go, Morgan, what's my why? The result will be probably a couple words and it's not going to sound so friendly. We need the objective perspective of another. Yeah. And the way we find our why, the theory is our why is who we are at our best. Mm-hmm. It's our origin story. Mm-hmm. It's who we are, and who we are is where we come from. And so everyone has a why. There's no such thing as, you know, like, oh, I'm a why person and you're a how person. Even if you're a how person, even if your strengths are in doing and getting stuff done, you still have a why. Mm-hmm. You may not be the huge sort of Steve Jobsian visionary. You could be the extremely tactical Wozniak. That's mm-hmm. healthy. We need both. If we only have jobs, guess what? We have long hair, beards, no shoes, and no progress. It's called a hippie commune. We need both. We need both the hippie commune and the industrial skills of getting stuff done.
Yes.
Otherwise, we have wonderful dreams and no reality. It's called hallucination. And funny how more hippies take hallucinogens. Anyway, that's a different conversation for a different day. But the way to find your why, whether you are a visionary or a real action-oriented person, not that the two are mutually exclusive, mm-hmm. you need to go to your past and you think of the times in your entire life, from your very earliest childhood memories to up until right now, both inside and outside of work, both inside and outside of education. And you think of the specific experiences and the specific people who have helped shape you to who you are today. Hmm. And they're significant memories, though they don't need to be significant times. So, like, for example, it could be your wedding day, but it could be something that the makeup artist said to you and looked you in the eye. Hmm. And you're like, you're right. That is my power. That is my human strength, right? Mm-hmm. So the key, though, is you then share those specific stories from your entire life and career mm-hmm. with an objective listener. And as they hear the stories of what matters to you and who you are at your best, there begins to emerge significant themes and patterns that consistently come across all of those stories. Mm. And that is where your why and your hows live.
That's incredible.
And then once you discover it, so for example, my why is to engage people in meaningful ways so that we more deeply connect. Mm. I love engaging people in meaningful ways because I was the youngest kid of three and I needed to find a way to stand out. So it turns out being funny and also going into deep meaning, because turns out I care about fulfillment and you can't be fulfilled if you're only cracking jokes.
Right.
You also got to talk about the stuff that matters, right, which you can do through jokes sometimes as well.
Yes.
And for me, I believe that when we more deeply connect with ourselves, self-awareness, which is the lubrication to the engine of leadership, relationship with others, because if you just lead yourself and don't lead others, guess what? You're not a leader. Mm. And then finally, relationship to the world around us, which is what does the world around me need that I can fulfill, which makes me of use, of value, of service. And then once you discover it, the key is you got to share it and you got to find people who believe in that vision as well. Though they may not agree, I hope they don't agree on how you'll get there, the steps you need to take to get there, because it's that diversity of thought and perspective that helps make progress. But it's when I wake up, Morgan, and I'm like, I don't want to do it today.
Yeah,
I can give an accountability buddy a call and say I'm struggling or I'm not at my best, and they remind me of my importance and they remind me of who I am at my best, and then I can take steps towards doing that every single day, because it's a choice to do it every single day.
Yes. I love the accountability portion, because I think quite often it's not easy, but it seems more straightforward to be able to identify these things in silos on your own, but to be able to bring someone else into that equation and to hold you accountable, especially as an educator where we do tend to be in our own classroom, so it can be easy to be independent within that process. I think that's a very valuable piece to this. So thank you for sharing that.
One thing there before we hop to the next question,
yes,
which is there's an equation that I strongly believe in, which is my truth plus your truth equals a higher truth. Hmm. So I'll have a perspective on how this interview is going. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's the truth. It's mm-hmm. just my truth. You'll have a perspective on how this interview is going. Mm-hmm. Turns out we may have some common beliefs in our truths.
Yes.
We'll also have different beliefs in our truths. And if sure. I can understand your truth and you can understand my truth, all of a sudden we have a larger perception of the whole truth.
Yes.
And so personal awareness, self-awareness, leadership development, personal professional development work cannot be done in silos, because you're only going to prove your truth over and over and over again and not gain from the perspective and truths of the people around you, which is why you can't discover your why on your own.
Oh, I love that. I think that's a great explanation. What is this concept of the circle of safety, and why is it so important to create safe environments of belonging in order to get to a place of creativity and innovation within a school setting?
Mm-hmm. So it turns out it takes risk to be yourself, which is so funny. Mm-hmm. But it does, because it's scary. Mm-hmm. It's scary to shine bright sometimes. So what is a circle of safety? A circle of safety is people within an organization or team. So let's just say a classroom. Mm-hmm. People within that classroom feel safe to be who they are. They feel that they belong. It's the definition of both diversity and inclusiveness. Diversity means they can be who they are, and inclusiveness means they're accepted for who that is, right?
Yes, yes.
Or diversity is you are something. Sorry if you can hear that truck outside.
I can, yeah.
And it's gone. Diversity is we're a wide range of people, and inclusiveness is, and that's welcome here.
Yes.
And so the question is, how do you develop a circle of safety? And the only way to do it is to go first. Mm. So many leaders will say, I just don't trust my people. Or here, let's make it real in the context of a classroom. I want my kids, I want my students to learn X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. And they're not. They're not putting in the effort. They're not taking the time. They're not giving of themselves fully in that endeavor. Mm-hmm. Guess whose fault that is? Mm. Theirs and yours. Which part of it can you control? Only you.
Right. Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so many leaders and teachers try to solve problems by fixing others, and you just can't do it. All you can do is change yourself. Mm. And so in order to establish a circle of safety, you have to go first. The only way to build trust is to extend it first. Mm. And so if you want to create an environment of diversity and inclusiveness, you got to go first. And you got to say that, you know, I still like to rollerblade or whatever. Right?
Yes.
It could be so innocuous, but like, and it may not be, you know, sexual preference or orientation. It may not be something that is a little bit more taboo or contentious, because it might, depending on the age,
yes,
might have harm. Or depending on the age, it might be the right thing you need to do.
Right.
And if there's reactions from parents or society, it's the responsibility of the leader to stand in their truth and what's right.
Yes.
And so if you want to establish a circle of safety, it's you who has to establish it. And it's up, you know, so goes the leader, so goes the culture. Mm-hmm. And so goes the culture, so goes the company, so goes the culture, so goes what the institution can accomplish.
So good. And I think about this in the context of vulnerability, because I think going first, you can do this in a fairly non-vulnerable way, which may not have the same outcomes as you envision, which is creating this environment where we can be our full selves.
Mm-hmm.
But the element of vulnerability kind of ups the stakes as a leader for your sharing, right? Like it sort of makes it so that, well, this isn't necessarily comfortable for me to share, but I'm doing it, and then you're able to do that. Can you speak briefly to that element of vulnerability within this?
Yeah, and the way to be vulnerable is to share stories. The way to be really vulnerable is to share personal stories. Another way to be vulnerable is to share stories that reflect your beliefs.
Right.
So you could speak about a secondhand experience, or you could speak in the third person if that helps you. Mm-hmm. The number of leaders I've coached to make a point in the third person and then reveal, oh, by the way, that's me. Right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
when you present it to the third person, it's objective.
Yes.
And they build empathy with Frank.
Yes.
Who, you know, had a stutter when he was 13.
Sure.
And you go, oh, by the way, I'm Frank.
Yeah.
And they go, whoa.
Yeah.
Right? And so you don't start saying, have empathy with me. You say, have empathy with Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that's my story.
That's really interesting. That's a cool tactic I hadn't really thought of on a really in an explicit way like that. So I like that. Yeah,
yeah,
that's great. Before I let you go, because I know you've got, you know, you've got all sorts of other obligations. Is there anything you'd like to touch on that we haven't had a chance to address as it sort of, you know, relates to this idea of creating safe environments?
I think the most important thing is to go fast, go alone, to go far, go together.
Mm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Stephen, for sharing your thoughts with me and for doing this interview. I've learned a lot in actually a very short amount of time.
Cool. And I hope it helps your audience. Thanks for doing this.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag #SmallActBigImpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.